Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Sound financial management is essential to the effective stewardship of taxpayer dollars and enabling agency decision makers to make tough choices on day-to-day and long-term management challenges. The U.S. Department of Labor continues to improve performance and its operations. Managing its resources efficiently and effectively is key. In an era of tight budgets, this charge has taken on a new significance beyond the fundamentals to ensuring the improvement of financial management within the department. What are the financial management priorities of the U.S. Department of Labor? How is labor improving its operations, becoming more efficient, and controlling costs? What is labor doing to reduce and eliminate improper payments? And how is labor working to transform the way it does business? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Jim Taylor, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor. Jim, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Steve Watson. Steve, as always, welcome.
Well, thanks, Mike.
So, Jim, before we get into specific initiatives, I'd like to get some context. Could you give us a sense of the history and mission of the U.S. Department of Labor?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Michael. And it's really a pleasure to be here. The fascinating thing is that after 30 years in the government, I came to the Department of Labor about 2 years ago. And I thought I knew about the Labor Department, what it did. However, once you get there, you really do get a sense for how important it is in the lives of virtually every American. The department's history is a good place to start because we'll be observing our 100th anniversary next year. We began gearing up for our centennial just before Labor Day this year, and we'll be having a symposium reflecting on our history and looking forward to the challenges of the coming decades in November. The department's newsletter is already running Centennial Moments, and that's available on www.dol.gov, hard to remember. The Department of Labor was actually established in March 1913 by President Taft. 2 years later, in 1915, the Bureau of Labor Statistics launched its monthly labor review. It's a publication that continues today and includes information about labor force, the economy, employment, inflation, productivity, wages, and other very timely topics. The 1930s and 40s were incredibly important decades for the department. FDR named Frances Perkins, our building's named for her now, as his Secretary of Labor, and she became the first woman appointed to the cabinet. She was in office for 12 years, starting in 33, longer than any other Secretary of Labor. She was the principal architect of the Social Security Act of 1935, which I didn't know, and the Federal Minimum Wage Act. She oversaw the creation of the Unemployment Insurance Program and fought against abusive child labor practices throughout the country. Today, the department, led by Secretary Hilda Solis, administers or enforces in whole or in part about 100 laws, and it touches the world of work, employee benefits and pensions, job training, veterans employment, occupational safety and health, mine safety, fair labor standards, and the collection and reporting of key labor statistics. So I'd say 100 years later, I think this mission is just as important as it was when they first passed the act.
So it's such an important mission. I'd like to get a sense of the scale of operations that you support. How is DOL organized? What's the size of your budget, number of full-time employees? And could you give us a sense of the geographical footprint?
Sure. I mean, to be honest, I mean, we're in virtually every city and virtually in every state and in every territory and in many foreign countries. Like I said before, you know, we touch the lives of almost all Americans one way or another. For example, labor administers a wide range of employment programs. Our Employment and Training Administration served 39.7 million Americans during the height of the recession from July 2009 to June 2010, including 22 million people who received career counseling. We prepare people leaving the military for careers in the civilian sector. This coming year, we expect to provide 5,700 employee workshops at military installations to an estimated 200,000 military service members coming home. We help keep workers safe. Our Occupational Safety, Health, and Administration provides free on-site assistance to about 30,000 small and medium-sized businesses and employ more than 1.5 million workers. Our Mine Safety and Health Administration works to reduce deaths and injuries at more than 14,000 mines. Our Employee Benefits Security Administration oversees 700,000 private sector retirement plans, 2.3 million health plans, and other workplace-related benefit plans to cover more than 141 million Americans. And to ensure that Americans can provide for their families and keep what they earn, 2011, the Wage and Hour Division collected more than $224 million in back wages, a record amount for that year, for any year, and helped more than 275,000 American workers. So we really do reach out and we touch everybody. We have a budget of about $17 billion in discretionary funding, but we spent over $224 billion in 2011, and in 2012, more like $90 billion. The majority of that is for unemployment benefits. We also have a workers' compensation program, Federal Employees Compensation Act, for injured federal workers that covers hundreds of thousands of federal workers who are injured on the job, Postal Service, TSA, every agency in the government. We also provide benefits to black lung sufferers, as well as employees who are injured in the industries who are building up the nuclear power plants. So they have a special benefit program as well. So those activities, in addition to our training and education activities, are really vital, I think, to the American workers.
Jim, thanks for that overview. Now that you've given us that overview, can you dig a little bit into the CFO's office? What are your responsibilities? How large is your office? How is your team organized? And how does your office support the mission that you just described?
Sure. As CFO, I'm responsible for about 160 federal staff. We have a lot of contractors in addition to that, but really what we are responsible for is financial policy, financial operations, all external reporting, budget execution for the department's programs. We have all the budget activities for all the smaller agencies. The larger agencies have their own financial operations, so we're pretty decentralized. That's why my staff is fairly small. We work through the agencies, and all the large agencies or larger agencies have their own financial operations. So it's really that collaborative exercise is really critical to our department. We also have the financial systems. We're responsible for the core financial reporting system for the department. We're centralized. There's one financial reporting system. There are cuff systems, as we call them, in different places. But the system of record is maintained by my office. We have travel operations, travel policy, personnel and payroll reporting, and the department's working capital fund, about $500 million of activity that supports the front office activities and programs, and all financial and budget support for the 20 or so smaller agencies. We also are responsible for all the internal controls and IPR activities in the department, A-123, as well as reviewing and the new one of the newer, really glory jobs in every CFO's life is reviewing all conferences for approval in the department. And we also are leading the effort on the president's campaign to cut waste.
So, Jim, regarding those responsibilities and duties, what are some of your top challenges, management challenges you face in your role, and how have you sought to address them?
Well, there are no lack of challenges that we've had. One was our financial management system. It's called the New Core Financial Management System, or just New Core. New Core was a challenge. It was a contract that was signed several years ago. It is the first cloud implementation department-wide for a financial reporting system. And it replaced a 20-year-old system that was not integrated with anything and that a lot of people liked because it was very easy to use. You didn't have to worry too much about funds control. You didn't have to worry too much about having to do much reporting because the system was very flexible. The second major challenge that I have is the skills, financial skills throughout the department. When I first sat down with our chief operating officer, the deputy secretary, Seth Harris, and discussed the kinds of things he would want me to do if I came to the department, that was number one was obviously straightening out the financial system. But number two was improving the financial capabilities throughout the department. And we have decentralized operations. We have a lot of financial people. And we've had a way of doing things for 20 years that's changed dramatically. And so doing a skills assessment and doing the planning and doing the training to improve those skills to match what we need to do going forward is really my second big challenge.
So given your experience, Jim, what are some of the characteristics of an effective leader?
You know, I used to play basketball in high school, and we had something called court awareness. It's knowing your environment. You know,
situational awareness.
Situational awareness. You've got to know. You manage, because management is situational. as you know. And, you know, when you're getting ready to pass a basketball, you know, you got to make sure that no one's going to intercept it, no one's coming up behind you fast. You just got to have a feel for it. And in management, you have to – not every management theory fits every single situation. You know, and we're all exposed to a plethora of training classes and great books on management, and they're very useful. But a lot of what it all boils down to is really using common sense, and which is, I think, tremendously underrated – and to understand what's going on around you. You know, you've got to listen to what's going on. You got to know your clients. You got to know what they want and what they expect from you. And then, you know, I think the key thing is to set your priorities and don't be afraid to say no. That's the hardest thing, particularly in the federal government. We try to help everybody. We try to do everything. And none of our clients or our stakeholders like the Congress or OMB want to hear no. And so you want to be parsimonious when you use that, but you want to use it. And don't be afraid to say no, and stick with those priorities. You know, I think it's hard for managers to stay focused on their priorities. And so you stay focused on them and then deliver. And I think that to me, people who do that are the ones who are the most successful.
What are the financial management priorities at Labor? We will ask Jim Taylor, Chief Financial Officer at the U.S. Department of Labor, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.